talking to Sophia today. She's my friend, daughter of a diplomat, highly educated, with a good career. What could possibly be wrong? Well, I don't know. I was talking to her once at home, and then I found out that she doesn't really identify to one nation or one language. In her family, they even speak different languages, not a common one. And I was very curious about this, because for me, this identity is a big thing somehow. And when I started digging a little bit more, then I found out that there was narcissistic abuse and physical abuse. And yeah, it turns out also that my friend Sophia is into BDSM, that she's been exploring. So she came on my bunker and told me all about it. And I was so excited about the whole thing that I didn't really do a proper intro or anything like that on the show. So sorry for that, guys. I just, yeah, I kind of dived right in. So that's a steep one. Enjoy. And almost forgot the sponsors. The Old Bar, Prague. You can order online or come and pick up. Open from 8:30 to 3 o'clock every day of the week. I said Fridays to 1:30 and Saturdays to 1:30. And nothing on Sundays, though. And then there is alfred.cz, available both as a web page or an app where you can set up your job watch and find your dream job. You don't have to spend hours looking for a job. Alfred does it all for you and you can apply with one click. Brilliant concept. Try it out. Today we have on my bunker Sophia. Sophia, welcome to my bunker.
Hi, how's it going?
Really good. You had some tattoos made today, right?
Indeed, I did. I had it done on my right leg.
Yeah?
Yeah, something I just actually came up with a week ago. So I'm glad I got it done as fast as possible, yeah.
You're such a rebel, middle of COVID times, and you're just out there getting a tattoo.
I had to.
Only rebels come to the bunker, that's how it is. Well, I was thinking when I was kind of planning this that like why you are here, and the reason is actually that, well, we have a mutual friend that goes back some years, but recently we were having a few vodkas in my kitchen, and I was listening to you talk about your childhood and family, and then I realized that you're kind of a rootless. You don't belong to any one country or any one culture. You have lived in multiple places. You told me that the only language that all members of your immediate family understand is English, but that's not the language that you grew up on. So I thought, okay, there is something here because, you know, I personally always kind of identify very strongly as a belonging to something. And then when we were talking, I found out that there were a few other things there. There was something, yeah, that you are a victim of narcissistic abuse and that you have ventured into the wonder world of BDSM.
Indeed.
Yeah, so I wanted to kind of get to know a little bit more about both of those things and see also even if there is some sort of a connection between those points. We are eventually the result of our childhood and upbringing.
Yes, we are.
So tell us a little bit about your background. So where are you from and who are you?
Yeah, so my father's Filipino. He is a journalist and photographer. My mother is Czech-German. She is a diplomat. And we grew up around the world. So I was born in the Philippines. I have a twin, I have a younger sister, I have an adopted brother, and a half-brother.
Mm.
So by the time I was 3, we moved to Geneva. There I learned German. I went to a German kindergarten. Then by 6 years old, I was in Vienna. There I went to 2 international schools in English.
Mm.
And then at 11, I went to Bangkok, and there I was from the age of 11 till 16, and then moved to Geneva again, and that's where I graduated high school.
And you move around because of your mother's work.
Indeed, yeah, yeah.
And so she is a diplomat, or for any specific
For the UN.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how? Because you gave me a little bit of a background, and I looked at this like you were like the student spokesperson. You were in the poetry club. You were on the political debate team. And I mean, for us who are not part of a diplomatic family and private schools, and we went through the regular stuff.
Yeah,
this always kind of looks very kind of perfect from the outside. Was it?
No, it was not. It's interesting because when you grow up in any way, however people grow up, you don't know anything else. So obviously I knew that we were not like the most common of people, but I just didn't know anything else. So this is just how I grew up. And I never thought twice of if this is normal or not.
Mm. Not as a kid.
No, definitely not as a kid.
But what was going on? I mean, what I guess, like, you told me a few things, like, it wasn't the perfect picture. Well, the picture looked good, but the reality behind it, you told me that you looked at old family photos at your granny's place, and then you started thinking about what was actually going on when those photos were taken. So how was this? And what was wrong?
Yeah, well, I was in, when was that? It was a week ago. I was in Germany because I started therapy already like a year and a half ago. And I just decided it's time for me to go back there. I haven't been there in a while. Also just to look at old photos because I've been really avoiding it. I already knew by then like things were not perfect. We already kind of knew that things weren't perfect growing up. But it's difficult to put it into words when you're growing up because you know something is wrong, but you can't really figure it out because your external world isn't confirming that there's something wrong. They're just saying, no, 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 everything's fine. It's all good. There's no need to worry. But yeah, then looking at those photos, it's just crushing, you know, because you see these photos and everyone's smiling. But then I just look at my face and I just think how almost dead inside I look. I am not myself. I am wearing clothes I don't want to wear. I am with people that probably don't even like me. And there's a lot of resentment under everything, which I think can also be attributed to possibly a lot of family photos. But in my case, I guess it's just more complex.
Yeah. In what way?
In the sense that we were kind of in the public eye, at least my mother was. So there is a certain... There is a certain look to be upheld. Yeah. So that is the just the complex part to that.
Mm. But there was narcissism and narcissistic abuse there going on.
Yeah. So my father is a classic overt narcissist. From the outside, he's very charming and everyone loved him. He had photograph exhibits in Bangkok. He wrote a book. He is very talented, but he was also very violent and, yeah, just a classic covert father. A covert narcissist is someone who is very, it's very obvious that they're narcissists. They only look for their own needs and they're very boastful about themselves. And anyone that comes, that threatens that look is,
it's an enemy.
Exactly. Even children. So, yeah. So, for example, I remember one time he took these photos of me and my sister. They're beautiful photos, black and white. And a friend of mine was over for a sleepover. How old was I? I think like around 13, maybe 12. She was over for a sleepover and then we all had breakfast and he was editing the photos and then we had them up. He had them up on the computer screen and then he was kind of playing with it and kind of making fun of my face in front of everyone, like, haha, look, oh my God, you look stupid like this and blah, blah, blah. So I just told him, I was like, I don't like it. It looks stupid. And I think any normal parent would just probably laugh or probably wouldn't even do that. But yeah, and then he took me and my sisters into the bedroom and started telling me how I am a bitch, how I am a prima donna and I should just better shut up. And yeah, that there is nothing much that I can really say to him. And then we just went back to the breakfast table with my friend sitting next to my mother and then we just continued as if nothing happened. So this was kind of the day-to-day. Yeah.
To break you down in a way, to make sure you feel inferior.
Indeed, yeah. And he did this with all of us, with all of his children.
But was he violent also like physically or was there like a physical violence?
Yeah, indeed. He was physically violent. If we didn't set up the table, then he would whip us with a belt. He would hit us with slippers until we were completely bruised. So okay. Yeah, it was, and this happened in multiple countries. So wherever we went, this would happen until the age of 13, when my parents divorced, when we were in Bangkok.
And why do you like? So I mean, a narcissistic abuse is often just the mental abuse, but yeah, obviously in this case, physical as well. I mean, and I think you mentioned to me sometimes that you were not allowed to eat and stuff like that, or how?
Yeah,
how?
Well, there were many incidences. One of them was in Vienna. I think I was about the age of 8. We were sitting around the dinner table. And me and my sisters were laughing. And he was talking, I think, with my mom. And he felt threatened, or I don't know why, but he decided it's not okay for his daughters to be laughing and smiling at the dinner table. So he screamed at us and made us eat our soup outside on the doorstep in front of our penthouse. So the three of us were sitting there eating our soup, Yeah, I just remember feeling incredibly anxious, not even really obviously angry at him, a lot of anger and resentment, but more anxiety of what are people going to think? What am I going to say if my neighbor comes out and just sees
and
these
messes
three
up
girls.
The perfect picture?
Indeed.
But how? But you know, because I have had talks with people that have been abused, and they didn't realize that they were being abused because they actually thought that what was going on everywhere, that this was the norm, and you're saying at that time you kind of thought that or
yeah, well, it's very complex, especially culturally, because in Asia, kids are used to get let's say disciplined if they don't behave, then they will get punished, like they will get hit. But there's a difference when it happens on the daily basis for literally just laughing and smiling, or when it happens because you're really misbehaving. Yeah.
And what else was like? What was there? Was there like? Why do you think this was? Was he drug abuser or alcohol, or I mean, was there some other?
Yeah, I mean, definitely there was drug use and alcohol. He was smoking a lot of weed around us. A lot of that.
And where was your mom?
My mother was there during all these times. She was also traveling, so she also left us at home with him a lot. So he was basically our primary caretaker.
And she knew what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's also very, how would you say, it's also very just not so simple when I try to talk to her now, like after dissecting all of this in therapy and just realizing that I actually have been abused, because I never really even thought that. I thought, yeah, that's fine. I mean, you know, you talk about it with your Asian kids, talk about it. Yeah, so what? Yeah, my parents yeah, I was misbehaving, so my mom like slapped me.
Mm.
You know, but there's obviously, as I said, there's a difference if that happens all the
every
time.
Every day, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so when I do talk to her about it, she just says that it did not happen or that she just doesn't remember, which to, yeah, it's difficult to, it's difficult to cope with that if your parents just don't want to admit to the things that happened.
Mm.
Yeah.
But how is your relationship with her now? I mean, like how, because you obviously don't see eye to eye on this.
Yeah, we keep it to debating politics and talking about finances.
So it's superficial.
Yeah. I don't think she would see it as superficial because to her that's genuine connection.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that is definitely it.
And what about the... So you said you've gone into therapy about this and has that helped you somehow or changed something? I don't know. Or is it an ongoing thing? Or do you
I think therapy in general is ongoing, even if people that don't have trauma, it's still it's good introspection. But it has definitely helped me. Before that, I didn't even realize I had trauma or I was really abused.
Mm.
When things like this happen to you as a child, it internalizes.
Mm.
So if your parent tells you every day that you are a piece of shit, that you are stupid, that you just do not deserve anything, then it internalizes.
Mm.
So that's kind of how you walk around through life.
So that's how you've been marked by this. I mean, you...
Yes, very much, yeah.
But in some way, I mean, you've been successful in educating yourself and other things. How... Is it possible that this hardship has actually shaped you and given you some sort of an extra, I don't know, like willpower or whatever?
Well, it's definitely made me see how resilient I am and how resilient other people can be when put in these situations. I think when you're put in such situations, it's very difficult because I've spoken with a lot of my friends and a lot of people I connect with. I think that happens anyway. You connect with people who have similar upbringings, who have similar, how would I say, like programming from childhood.
Mm.
Energies linked together. So you kind of gravitate towards people who have the same upbringing. But it's also different when you have had this happen to you in multiple countries and it would be literally illegal for someone to intervene.
Mm.
The police cannot intervene or
because
you know,
there
are no social services because where would I go in Bangkok?
Yeah, and also the diplomatic status,
immunity,
I guess.
Indeed, yeah.
And do you think that in some, was there any case where you felt that your father got away with something which he would not have had if he was a regular Joe?
Everything he did would not be okay.
No, I mean, it would never be okay, but what I mean is that from a police or authority and
intervention. Yeah, well, definitely. There was a time he crashed a car. I think he was driving under the influence. My sister was in the car with him and he crashed and she injured her jaw and we all went to the emergency room. And then it was, he was under the influence, but obviously he got away with it because of our status.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So you say that you have this relationship with your mom now that is kind of, a monotopic or duotopic relationship about finances and politics.
Yes.
And I guess, what about your father?
I do not speak with my father that much.
No.
Still
something or.
He's in the Philippines, and he has I think a page on Facebook where he posts his daily prayers and has a following.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
he's a cult leader.
I think that is probably his dream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but
so
that's actually ideal for narcissists to be a cult leader.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, growing up, we would go to different churches. In Vienna, we joined a Protestant, I don't remember what kind of church it was, some kind of Christian church. And he was very much the most popular man there.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. And what about your siblings? I mean, do they see this in the same way as you, or did they experience it in the same way? Or?
Yeah, that is also the other complex part about being raised by narcissistic parents, is that they love to triangulate and give every child a role.
Yeah.
So.
And what was yours?
Mine was the scapegoat. So there are many roles. I guess one could say scapegoat and mascot at times. For people that don't know anything I'm talking about right now.
But more people know about it than we actually think.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
It's kind of scary, but it's also good that a lot of people are knowing about this. I've also myself just been delving into this for the past 2 years and just really threw myself into all of this kind of jargon. Mm. So, for example, my twin was very much the golden child, someone that my mother could present everywhere. So she was, you know, heading the athletic. She was in the volleyball team, ballet, piano lessons, everything.
I've seen your twin. I don't want to ruin this story, but so you're like 155, and your twin is like 185.
Indeed, yeah.
So I understand that she was in the volleyball team, and you were in the poetry club,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. I've definitely had that emo phase.
Yeah.
I was very much that emo kid. I mean, I was also the only white girl in my school.
Yeah, and in the family as well.
Yeah, I take after my mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But sorry, yeah. So your sister is the kind of the poster child that everybody is proud of.
Exactly. So the golden child, or as a lot of narcissist experts would say, the golden victim, because you cannot get out of that box. Even if you would want to be something else, if she would want to be something else, she would not be able to. My younger sister was very much the black sheep, but in a different way, because the black sheep is always someone that the family uses almost as a scapegoat to say that they are the problem of the family. Mm. But she was very much allowed to be a rebel. So she was very rebellious. Going out a lot at a very young age and partying, which I did too. But with her, it's okay because she's the rebel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you are the.
And I was very much the scapegoat. So growing up when we traveling around and going to different schools, I was always. I had like learning difficulties. Mm. When I first started reading, I was stuttering a lot. And I was never given a tutor or never really helped in any of those cases. Yeah. So they were just, but that's just her.
Mm-hmm. But this triangulation of the family or the kids, that quite often it's the case when there is a narcissistic parent and that they actually divide the family as well, like they make them enemies or they make them compete. Yeah. Did you experience such?
We definitely experienced that. And we didn't just experience that at home, but wherever we went, I think people were just very in awe of our family, seeing these three little half Asian girls. So, and then my grandma, who lives in a German town, we would visit her all the time there. They would always, you know, compare who's prettier, who's skinnier, who's smarter. I think this is something that has very much followed all of us throughout mm-hmm. our lives, even now into adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this came only from your father or your mom was just passive on these things or?
She was very much passive when it came to his violent fits of screaming in restaurants at us and things like that. She was just there and very passive. So as children do, we take on the role of the hero. So we would defend our mother a lot. When he would scream at her, we would, you know, try to make him stop. By saying something funny or by distracting in a different way so that he would just take his attention off of her. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Are you friends with your siblings, or how is that now?
Yeah, we're friends. I'm closer with my younger sister right now. I think it changes every few years.
Uh-huh.
We all get closer in different ways, also in different stages of our lives. Whoever's in a relationship, it's rare that the three of us are in a relationship, or that the three of us are altogether not in a relationship. So depending on how our lives are similar, that's how we get along.
Do you think that some of this, I'm thinking because of back to when I said why you're here, like that you're kind of a rootless. Because I asked you, what country do you belong to? You said none.
Exactly.
Do you think this would have been different if you would have lived in one place? Was the diplomatic moving and all that, was that the perfect kind of smokescreen for what was going on?
Yeah, definitely. It definitely was, especially dissecting now my whole upbringing and just my life, my 28 years on this planet. Definitely thinking about how if we did just grow up in Germany, because that is my passport, it would have completely been different, because we would have, first of all, we would be long enough in a place where people would eventually realize that there's something going on.
Mm.
And we would... us ourselves realize that maybe this isn't normal because our friends are not experiencing this.
But when
we move every year somewhere else, that kind of gets distorted of what is normal or what is the norm in wherever you are.
Mm.
And especially if you're living in places where you don't speak the language.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you don't have that connection to the society that would enable you to kind of, I don't know, realize this or get out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you angry at them?
Yeah, very much. I take out a lot of my anger and resentment at the gym, which is hard now during Corona. But I go running outside and definitely processing a lot of anger, which is also healthy, because I've been very much putting that off in 2020.
Mm.
Going out a lot, doing drugs and just enjoying life, but also really avoiding just working through my past.
Mm.
Yeah.
But is there anything positive that you take from this? I mean, is there something where you think, okay, at least it gave me this?
Yeah, it definitely taught me a lot about resiliency, I think.
Mm.
Growing up, I never really saw myself as a strong, resilient person. I would very much hide always behind my mother or behind my sisters. But now I'm really realizing how much I've actually gone through. And at some point in your life, you have to make a decision. Once you realize all the horrible things you've been through, you kind of make a decision. Do I really want to live in this mindset of being a victim, or do I want to be resilient and really show and prove to myself and to no one else that I am more than just this kind of upbringing?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to blow your trumpet, but I think you've been doing pretty well considering all this. I mean, like, I never, and even when we've talked about this stuff a little bit earlier, then I've never seen you as a victim, and I never felt that you were victimizing yourself.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's not necessarily a nice experience to have. And it's interesting that your sister was the golden kid, but you were still the one from the poetry club and political debate and all that stuff. And that wasn't enough, you know?
Of course.
You're never good enough.
Oh, never, never. No. I mean, I think in the eyes of any narcissistic parent, their child is never good enough. Even the golden child, they are there to be presented in a certain way, but they also have to act in a certain way.
Yeah.
And if you give your child the feeling that they are enough, then you would not be a narcissist.
No. That's this golden rule about unconditional love that seems to be not very common.
Yeah.
But this is the past, and every time I meet you, I feel that you're trying to run away, you're trying to get somewhere, or you're coming from somewhere, and now I know you're moving away from Prague, mm-hmm. and you've been working really, really hard on moving away from Prague.
Yeah, I've been trying. Berlin didn't work out, so yeah.
And I know that But if we take Berlin, because it's kind of connected to the other topic that we wanted to talk about, then you told me that you kind of went into some sexual discoveries, and Berlin was kind of chosen as a destination for that reason.
So before this lockdown, that was already my plan because my sister is there. So I've been going there for a while now.
The younger.
Indeed, yeah. So I've been going there for a while now, and it was 2 years ago when I got out of a 5-year relationship. I kind of had a lot of self discovery to do. That's also when I started therapy. So when I kind of, then I stumbled upon some BDSM podcasts, Loving BDSM, shout out. Mm-hmm. They're really good. It's a couple, and she is a sassy submissive, and he is her dominant, and they're a couple, and they talk about the BDSM community. So I was listening to that a lot, and then figured out that I am a Sam and have really used 2020 to explore that as much as one can in 2020.
Yeah. But you just stumbled across this, or was there something in your sex life previously that that you felt was something missing, or something that you liked and you wanted more of? I mean, how does one?
Yeah, well, I think, like I said, like growing up, not just shame around, obviously, I think a lot of people have shame around sex and kink, but just also growing up the way I grew up, I was very like ashamed to even try out new things or just have that confidence to put myself out there. Mm. So I think I always wanted to kind of explore that lifestyle, but I just never had the confidence or like the actual opportunity to.
But do you think that, now, just when you say this, I'm thinking, okay, because you were boxed in your childhood in a way that you were supposed to follow a certain path, and there were expectations of you, even if you were the scapegoat. So you actually brought that with you into the now in a way that you felt constrained still.
Yeah, definitely. And I think with a lot of people that go into the BDSM community, they take that with them. It's I would say a healthy space where you can use it as also for healing, past traumas, and to really just gain your confidence in who you are sexually and just who you are in general as a person and as a self. So the fact that I was, let's say, being scapegoated a lot of my life, and like you said, like put in a box, and I had to really just like follow this kind of mold. It's very empowering when you can bring that into a sexual scenario and with people that respect where you come from, and then you respect their story.
Mm. And so you said 5 years relationship. Was there was none of this going on there?
No, not none of this.
Well, that was what they call in the books vanilla.
Very, very vanilla. Very vanilla. I didn't even think about it. I mean, I guess I kind of dreamt about it, but I would never even think to initiate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I didn't know a lot about this. I read the book about BDSM a few years ago, just out of curiosity. And then obviously when I knew that we were going to talk, then I did a little bit of a research. And I mean, what we have in BDSM is typically the dominant and then the submissive.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk maybe more about the submissive. So what are kind of the types in this? Like what type of people, you said in these podcasts, there is a sassy.
Mm-hmm.
What's a sassy?
It's in the name. So she's very sassy.
Mm.
I think it really relates to what I identify as a Sam. Mm.
Sam means?
And a Sam is a smart ass masochist.
Uh-huh.
And a lot in the BDSM community, people say that a Sam dominates from the bottom, so tops from the bottom, which I think I very much relate to. Also growing up, like I said, my father would ridicule us a lot and just really like us to feel small. And as a kid, I'd sometimes just laugh in his face. Even if I knew I would get punished for it or I would get more ridiculed later, it was just I love that I had that in me as a child to still like stick it to him.
Yeah,
in
to make him pissed off.
And, yeah, to piss him off because, yeah, that's kind of the dynamic I grew up in, I guess, like with my family and with my dad especially. Mm. But then I took that with me, I think, also in life. So whenever someone did make fun of me or kind of try to put me down, even if it wasn't probably, even if they weren't trying to be mean or something, I would love to just be very sarcastic.
I'm confused. Tell me, what are the main types of this? Like kind of just type by type a little bit.
Yeah, so I'm not going to really talk about DOMs because I'm not so familiar with them. But with submissives, I mean, there are also a ton of them. But for example, there's you can be a service submissive, and that is someone who takes orders and enjoys being, let's say, bossed around. Mm. And then they would have a sir DOM. And you can also have a slave submissive, so they would only literally be there just for sex. And then you can also have a brat, who is something similar to how I identify as a Sam, who is very bratty. So they're kind of childish and they like to provoke.
Mm. I saw also something called pats and flurries, and those are people that want to be treated like pets in a way.
I'm not too familiar with them, but I think they identify, or that would be their kink.
Yeah. And I saw that they had these special tail plugs. You can guess where that the end of the plug goes in, but that kind of gives you a tail.
Indeed.
It sounds like, I spent some time reading about this, and I was thinking like, this is almost like a full-time job in a way that, for example, if you talk about this, because, you have those that are bedroom versus those who are 24/7. I mean, you could be like a service submissive 24/7, and that basically means that you do whatever your dominant tells you, right?
Well, I think what is also very important in the BDSM community or in any kind of sexual, like in any kink community, is that consent and that trust. So when you do find someone or a community where you feel comfortable saying your story of how you came to have a certain kink or a certain fetish, then you can really just live it out without any shame or without any fear. So I think consent is definitely a big buzzword here.
Mm-hmm. But it's like, I know that you also need to buy stuff, like there are costumes sometimes and there are extras and stuff. I mean, it's an investment both in time and money, and I mean it's not that average once a week, 5 minute sex.
No, not at all. So I mean, in my case, I'm a Sam, so I don't like really dress up specifically. It's more of a wordplay. So as a Sam, as the name implies, a smart ass masochist, one provokes the Dom into getting punishments. Mm. And punishments can also be obviously, or should be, first talked about with the dominant of exactly what kind of punishments and for how long.
And what punishment do you like?
So I get everything on my ass. So spanks and bites are my number one. Yeah.
Okay. And is it always sexual? Do you know what I mean? Or
yeah. No. I mean, I think for... Well, I can only speak for myself. So for myself, it's more a kink. So there's a difference. So a kink is something that turns you on and can be sexual, but that's not something that you need in order to have an orgasm. So if someone has a fetish, let's say foot fetish, they really need that in order to actually orgasm. Mm. But this is a kink for me. So it's more in the enjoyment of it.
Mm-hmm.
Getting turned on in that wordplay with the Dom.
And the but when I mean like also the sexual, because Because I guess, especially maybe with those like server submissives, the slaves, and some of these that, let's say, require more of your time and money and everything,
yeah.
That is it an identity as well? You know, do you know what I mean? Is it something that you take with you into your everyday life somehow?
You know, it's interesting because when I first started this, when I first started like the role playing as a Sam and really getting into that character, I really realized that she's been inside me my whole life, I think. I'd kind of act that way, or I'd let her come out in certain moments. So I think she's been inside me all the time. Mm. But definitely, like I said, when I started this, it really gave me a lot of confidence in life to just know who I am without having to show it to anyone else.
Mm. And how does this work? I mean, so as a smart as masochist, you need to have a dominant. I mean, there is no submissive without a dominant.
Yeah.
How can that be either a man or a woman? I mean, or do you have a physical attraction to the person? How?
Well, I consider myself pansexual, which means I could be attracted to anyone, depending on how we get along, our personalities, and I would say energies and vibes. But I've so far only been with men, with like heterosexual men.
For this or just in general?
For this.
Yeah. But I think, because I think you were talking about it the other day when we were chatting about this,
yeah,
a little bit, that it's not like the physical thing is more or less the least important thing for you. It's more the vibe and the chemistry.
Oh, definitely. And I think that... I think that is definitely true. I think in general, even without BDSM.
Yeah.
But in BDSM, I think especially one has to be on the same page on things. So in terms of what turns you on, or in terms of just respecting the other person's kink, is very important.
But respect, do you have like a safe word? Or you don't need that?
No, I wouldn't need that in my... let's say in my field of submissiveness, I wouldn't.
In your profession.
In my profession, I wouldn't need a safe word.
No.
It can come up. I think people have asked me before, and then I just said that, like, I don't think we will need it.
Mm.
Yeah, it's very much. I've delved into role play. So, what did I do on? One that is very, I guess, like controversial, psychologist and patient.
Uh-huh.
So it's, yeah, and it was really funny because, and then I was just in complete Sam mode. So it's fun when the dom is trying to be really serious and they're trying to be dominant and assertive.
Mm.
And then you come in as a Sam and provoke and make sexual connotation to anything that they're saying. And try to break them down in terms of, okay, now you need to get punished, or just, yeah, cracking up laughing. So I think with that role play, we ended up laughing more than there were
yeah,
definitely more laughs than actual punishments, which was not bad.
But this kind of dynamic, can is it like a long-term ongoing thing? It's not just like a, I don't know, you're sitting watching Netflix on a Tuesday and then you,
yeah,
just turn over to, okay, now you're my therapist and I'm gonna, you know.
No. I mean, we obviously, like, no, it's definitely all very planned out. It's not as not as fun and natural, I think, as people might think. So with my dom, we during lockdown, we did a lot of different role plays and we experimented a lot. So every week we would research things, and we would have like a space where we would do it and really like talk about each other's roles and what we would like the outcome to be, even if it doesn't always follow that.
Mm.
It's good to have that plan,
and that's what, this so is what very, I was it's saying it's like out. A full-time job.
Yeah,
it's
really very fun. I mean, what else can we do in lockdown, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in this case, like it's you're building something up over a longer time. I mean, the let's say the pinnacle or the climax of it is the punishment, I guess. I mean, that's like, yeah. But the build up to that could be what, hours or
it can be hours. It can also not be. So I think it depends also per person. And then in the end, I guess, not maybe having a safe word, but then you can obviously say when you would not like to, when you would like to finish. But yeah, so we've done it for like four hours was our longest role play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was.
But isn't it like when you're doing like a 4 hours role play, it's like that's longer than the Godfather Part One. You know, like isn't it hard to keep character the whole time?
You know, it's really funny because when I did it, for example, when we did it the first time, we didn't even realize how fast time flew by. Yeah, uh-huh. it was insane. I'd get punishments and then we would continue the role play and then do it again. And then at some point we were just like, okay, we're kind of tired now. And then we looked at the time. We're like, oh, okay. It's 2 a.m. We should probably wind down.
Yeah. But so like you said, you had this 5 years relationship and then you get out of that and you get into exploring this. Now,
yeah.
The dominant that you have now is not a relationship as such. I mean, you don't live together or anything like that.
No. I mean, it gets also pretty, let's say, like hairy during Corona or during lockdown because we were each other's doms and submissive, but then we started hanging out with each other's friends and hanging out at each other's places because there's not much where else you could go. Yeah, mm. And there's nowhere else you could go. So that complicates things a bit. But then we ended it as just being subs and doms, which I think was the best idea, yeah.
But how do you see it like that? I'm wondering, you know, like how do you find a partner if you want to have a long-term partner? I assume that this is something that you want to have as part of your sex life, let's say.
Yeah, that's interesting because I would say no. This is not something that I would, I think, do with maybe, I mean, possibly, yeah. But I think for now, I don't really see myself as marrying someone where we would have that dynamic a lot because I think it would just complicate things. I like to separate things a lot.
And you would then want to get this somewhere else?
Yeah. From a BDSM community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have this friend here. I just remember now that she goes once a month and gets spanked somewhere in a basement, and it's just like that, and no questions asked, nothing, no problems. She comes home and fine, and then she's good for a month.
Yeah, I mean, like to each their own, right?
Yeah.
I think. Like I said, I think it is anyway already my personality to be kind of funny and jokey and like provocative like that.
Mm.
But to actually have that all the time with someone, I think would be too, or even not just to have it all the time, but to have someone that you have that dynamic with, to like live with them and kind of lead, let's say, like a normal life or in society, is very difficult.
So basically when you... if you want to find a partner, then what you're going to present is first of all a kink that you're not going to share necessarily with that partner, and then you're going to tell that partner that you are going to seek that somewhere else.
I would just say that I would just present that this is something I'm into, but they don't have to be into it, or I wouldn't want to pressure them into it.
Mm.
If they'd want to try it out, sure, but I would also let them know that is just not something that I would want to do with with my partner constantly.
So you need polyamorous?
I guess. I mean, because it doesn't have to lead to sex, right? Mm.
You could stop it at the, yeah.
It's about receiving the punishment. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's, yeah. I don't know if one would consider, polyamorous. Yeah. Probably, but I wouldn't.
Well, most guys would have a hard time accepting this. I can just tell you that right away. I am a guy. I know how we think.
But that's why I said that's why you have to find someone who you also trust in that sense.
Yeah.
To not overstep boundaries, which can also be difficult, but once you do find that dynamic, it's very rewarding.
Yeah. I was curious when I was thinking about this stuff that when does it stop being normal sex and become this or a fetish or a kink? You know, what's the, like, is there any sort of a measurement?
Well, I think, again, like, to each their own. Mm. But I would say anything that any person would consider a kink, like something that is out of the ordinary, which I know in today's world it could be like anything and nothing. Mm. But I think it's good to structure it. At least for me, I always structure it. So I wouldn't want to, when I am in a relationship and with a loving partner and we're very intimate together, then the sex is completely different. There's no games needed. And I wouldn't want to have that dynamic, because that can also get so kind of entangled and a bit, not so healthy.
Yeah, so I guess that's what you said earlier, the difference between a fetish and a kink, in a way that the fetish is a necessity to drive sexual stimulation, whereas the kink is more a game.
Exactly. A kink is just something that turns you on, but you don't really need it.
Okay, well, that's interesting. What about like the social acceptance? I mean, like you're obviously here on this world famous podcast talking about this. But I mean, and you're not shy to talk about this. I mean, we've had conversations about this before, and I've heard you talk to other people about this as well. How are people perceiving this? You know, when you tell them about this.
Well. I think they're just very much intrigued. Everyone's very intrigued, and I like that. I feel like it makes them look at their own self, because a lot of the times they will then just be like, "Oh, I think I could also do that," or like, "Maybe I do identify, but I am kind of a bit of a Sam. Like, I am also very sarcastic." So I like that it kind of opens people's minds or opens doors for people. Mm. It's not like I bring this out every. It's not like I'm talking about it all the time. But when it comes up and people, when people ask, I bring it up, and I think it's nice. I've never met someone that was completely like, okay, this is horrible. Mm. I mean, I don't think I'd also bring this up with my own family.
No, but I know for a fact that you have a very open-minded, tolerant group of friends here. I mean, like the people that you've been around are not the type of people that would judge for something like this.
I think in general, like wherever I grew up, I would never really be, I'm not that person to go with people that are conservative or would want to kind of shame someone for expressing themselves.
Mm. Have you, like, if I would have met you before these discoveries and after, has this somehow empowered you or changed your personality, confidence?
Completely, yeah. I think that has a lot. Shout out to my therapist. I fucking love her. She's awesome. She just helped me figure out a lot of shame and resentment that I've been keeping in that I didn't even realize from childhood, the way I was brought up.
Mm.
And then once I really started to heal, it's a never-ending process, but once I really started to delve into that, then I also had less shame to follow this, to follow my kink and to get into the BDSM community. So I would definitely say I was a very different person. I still struggle with anxiety, but before that I was just riddled with it, and I don't think people would even notice it. I just threw all of my time into debating politics and just all of my energy into that kind of stuff. But when I, but beneath that, I was very anxious. And so I'm really glad I got to work that out. And now I can also be more open about things I actually like without having shame and without wondering what people are thinking.
Mm. Yeah. So it has empowered you and given you confidence.
Yeah, that very much.
And it's better than the poetry club.
I miss writing poetry, but I would say definitely.
But I mean, it's actually like, it sounds like you were supposed to become your mom.
Yeah.
You were supposed to be a diplomat or something. You're here in, you know, the poetry club and the speech club and political debate club and this stuff.
Yeah. That was my plan. Because I just didn't know anything else. I just really didn't know anything else. And even if I tried to venture out, I thought, I don't think I could do that because I just don't identify with it. I don't know what. I studied business for like 2 years and then decided I didn't like it and went into international relations. I still love debating politics. I still love debating philosophy, but I would definitely not want to go down the road of diplomacy and politics.
No.
Career-wise.
Regarding the kink, you know, the BDSM part, like you feel that, or how, I don't know how this, will it develop? Will it change? Or do you think you just found yourself and you're going to sit there?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. I love that you asked that because I used to always think people that switch and people that always like change, not change the kink, but change between being a dom and a submissive aren't really like, aren't that committed to their kink.
They're cheating.
Yeah, they're cheating. But then once I joined this Kinky Collective, shout out to the Kinky Collective in Berlin. Once I joined them, I met people who are obviously into the same things that I'm into. And then I met a lot of people that switch and they were telling me when they're with this person, then they're more submissive. When they're with that person, they're more dominant. And yeah, so I think I am ready to explore my more dominant side. I definitely love being a Sam. I definitely love being submissive in that sense. But then I also realize, oh, maybe I'm not even that submissive because a Sam is
controlling from the bottom.
Yeah, like you, you wouldn't be a good Sam if you were taking orders. So yeah, I think this weekend I'm heading back there. It would be nice
to Berlin.
Yeah, explore the dominant side of me.
I remember from that book that I read a few years ago that one of the arguments or the point that the author came with was actually that in the end it's the submissive that controls the relationship because it's that person that has kind of the stop button and is accepting to put themselves into that role. So yeah. It was just an interesting way to see it, you know?
I think that's just consent, and that's just a normal or a healthy way to do it, right?
But if you look at those two words, you know, dominant versus submissive, then in the end, if nobody wanted to be submissive, there wouldn't be any dominance.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So in the end, it's someone who has to agree to walk through that door of becoming the submissive that enables the dominant to dominate.
Of course.
So that was just a really, I felt that was an interesting way to actually see this relationship or this structure.
Yeah. No. I totally agree, and that's why I also have a lot of respect for people in general in the BDSM community, but for submissives in general. I don't think all of them have gone through, you know, difficult childhoods, but a lot of them probably have. And to be able to work through that and then to set your boundaries and to really explore that in a safe environment, I think takes a lot of strength and a lot of inner power. So definitely they are in control.
Yeah. You go to Berlin. You've primarily been doing this in Berlin, right? Why Berlin?
In Berlin, it's Berlin. There's just a bigger community for that. More open-minded people. I haven't really explored like an actual collective here yet, like a group of people. But I have my dom is here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But in Berlin, why do you think that's the case? Why is that scene somehow there? I mean, what has made that?
I think Berlin has always been the cultural hub for artists.
So it's the mix of people that are.
Yeah, I mean, I think also like in the 1930s, right, or 1920s, with Marlene Dietrich, they
were. I love that German accent now.
With Marlene Dietrich, yeah, they were all. Yeah, I mean, they were already doing polyamorous and I don't know, pansexual parties in the 1920s. So I think we're not so, let's say, new. We're not discovering anything new.
No.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's in the heart of Berlin and the people there.
Mm. You said this now that you think a lot of submissive have possibly had a hard childhood or some difficulties in childhood and I just before you came here now I was thinking, well, isn't the dominant the perfect narcissist?
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think all DOMs are. I don't think all DOMs are like sociopathic or narcissistic.
No,
or
but
anything.
They're playing the role of the narcissist.
But yeah, I think when you've grown up in that kind of dynamic, you're just so used to it. And as much as, for example, me, as much as I try to shake it off and be like, no, this, at some point, I think as everyone does, question like, is this really okay? Is this healthy for me? Once you kind of get over that shame and guilt or whatever you want to call it, and you really just own it and then you can just play that out. I think that's really, really empowering. Mm. So yeah, when you find someone that can like act that way or is themselves already like that, that's also really, really interesting. Mm. But yeah, I think it's also, one has to then also again, like set boundaries and rules for when. If you do find someone that is like more on the narcissistic or NPD spectrum, to then really set boundaries, because then that can also be a bit challenging.
It's interesting stuff. If someone is listening, oh, it's a really good sentence. If someone is listening, to those millions out there listening, what? And someone is inspired by listening to you, because I mean it takes guts and balls to actually go and explore this, you know, to go after it and find it, like you said, to own it.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those things that I think a lot of people think about, that but they never kind of explore. They don't go after it. They're scared. They're scared of how people will see them. They're scared of the, you know, what if it's like you're saying, if is it wrong for me or is it morally wrong or whatever. But what if someone is listening now and is thinking, okay, I wanna check this out more. Do you have any advice? Where should they start? You know,
I would definitely say to check out the Loving BDSM podcast and to just research as much as possible about it. My favorite BDSM movie is The Secretary with Maggie Gyllenhaal and James Spader.
Mm.
I definitely identify with her in that. Check out all those kinds of materials, and then figure out which one appeals to you, and try to get also kind of society's voice out of your head. I think when you're watching that, just think very much of if it appeals to you. If it doesn't, that's also fine. Vanilla is also not anything to be shameful for.
Now people have been eating that as an ice cream for hundreds of years, curious though, you know, so you went in there, you investigated.
Yeah.
Were you scared the first time you went into the situation?
I wasn't that scared because after my 5-year relationship, I entered a relationship with a guy where our sex life was more, I would say, rough. But I didn't really, you know,
you had like a bridge.
Yeah, exactly. But I didn't categorize yet. This is submissive. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is dominant. We were just trying things out. And he was older, so he already knew a lot of things. So I was just like, okay, like trying things out. And it was obviously very like respectful. And then I ended that. And then I decided, okay, I want to take some of those things that we did into my kink life. And then I really started to categorize, okay, what kind, I know I'm a submissive, and what kind am I?
But the first moment you stepped into whatever place it was, and you knew you were going to be the smartest masochist. Were you nervous, scared?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, one's always nervous. A few shots of vodka always help.
Yeah.
But yeah, it started, I think, like the proper, like me being a proper Sam was a role play with my Dom. When we started quarantining together, that's actually how the relationship began. And then we were both just talking about like, oh, we both want to do this. Like, it was really amazing that
conversation.
It was really amazing that he wanted to kind of explore that Dom side, and then I wanted to explore the submissive side. So it was really like amazing that
very convenient thanks to COVID.
Exactly.
One of the great things that COVID brought you.
I mean, what else are we gonna do, right? Like
Okay, but I think this is kind of like we're almost at the end of the road. People should check. They can check webpages. They can check that podcast. What's that called again?
Loving BDSM.
This, my podcast, is the most tolerant podcast. We're even advertising all the podcasts on mine.
Of course.
But I know you published some articles. I mean, if people want to read something or see something, and you told me you're writing something, right?
Yeah, I'm writing short stories. So on Medium, it's a platform for articles or story writing. You can find Neurosis on My Mind. It's going to be out at the end.
What is that about? Like, in what's the elevator pitch?
So it's an exploration of my own neuroses, I guess. Neuroses are like psychological conditions that are, I guess one would say, unhealthy, but they are not attributed to any like psychological disorder, like a personality disorder or a mood disorder, like bipolar or something like that. So a neurosis can be like an eating disorder, hair picking, which is something I I do a lot and try not to do. So I write about that, my experiences with all of these neuroses that I've been going through, or that I've been living with my whole life, and then I just put them into different characters. So I'm working on that story.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it, guys. I want to ask you to follow the show. We have a page or on Facebook called The Bunker. How the hell did we end up here? There is an Instagram account called Bunker Prague, I think. My personal Instagram and Twitter is Midlife Crisis Warrior. If you're listening on an iPhone, then please go in and review and rate the show. I need all the love that people can give. And thanks to the sponsors, and great Sophia, thanks for coming here. It's super interesting.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
I learned a lot in the last 3-4 days about BDSM, and I can't say it was
very educational.
Well, I have to admit that when you read something about this, I admire the people that actually take the time of exploring it, because the mainstream will just point finger at this and say that it's bullshit or it's weird, and these are the pioneers. These are the people that are actually doing something, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy for that. Oh, thanks for coming, and have a nice evening.